So the thing actually has to do with case-by-case kind of analysis. And it has to do with, you know, kind of the feeling of the state of the law at the moment that we're exactly talking, you know? So so the thing is, when we got those, when we got rights and permissions, we got them for single broadcast or we got them for multiple broadcasts. Sometimes people signed and said that they realized that the material might be used in different ways later. Sometimes people specified that they didn't want things ever to be, you know, like edited or something like that. But mostly there's, mostly what it is just the recording of whatever happened with no rights and permissions other than the assumption that it could be broadcast for nonprofit educational purposes on the radio.
Thank you.
Right. So I'm.
Can we move on? Teresa
so
had a question.
So my comment is that we, it sounds to me as if we should be working very diligently to find out if those people need, we need to get their permission to use these recordings.
Right. But, you know, as we said, in a per-case basis, that's why we actually called Stud Circle on Friday to ask him to sign the release and send it to us to cover everything that he would give us and everything that we had.
But, I mean, more than just Stud Circle, any politicians, for example, that we've had interviewed on our, you know, cast for one.
Ah, see, if they're in office, they give up the rights to their material.
That's correct.
It's a trick.
That include for when they're not in office anymore? Or does that include like William F. Buckley or Casper Weinberger or various...
I think it's while they're in office.
Okay. But my... So, and I'm also assuming that maybe we should do a PSA, send a PSA to NPR stations to put on their radio saying, you know, we have this wonderful archive. If you like community radio and you'd like to hear interesting voices, such as blankety blankety blank blank, visit, you know, whatever, because that's a PSA that they should do for another nonprofit. But my question is this. There was a show that I asked you about before. It was the KPFK, and a guy that gave the most wonderful, marvelous background music on folk, background information on folk music. And I'm asking, tell me sometime offline what it would take to get that person's permission and to get some of those digitized, because I think that's valuable information that may never, I mean, he was a programmer, but we've got folk music, and I don't know whether, I mean, from my question to you earlier, it doesn't sound like he would ever get around to the fact that we would digitize that.
Well, we don't know, first of all.
Digitizing is another question, Teresa, but if I'm understanding what you're saying, is this a show in which he also played examples of the music?
And he was our programmer? Then yeah. we got the rights.
Because you'd have to go get the rights to the music. If
but we
you
probably have the rights to him.
If you wanted to look at, and not only the rights to the materials that the
What's
programmer
the
made.
At PFK. We're getting into specifics right. Instead of trying to deal
we'll
with
talk
the...
about that some other time. Thank you very much.
Shall we move on?
Yes.
Yes.
And let's see, where are we moving to?
Yes.
Are we going to Teresa's grassroots radio conference
report?
We're
going to the PNB meeting.
Oh, PNB meeting, sorry. Let's see, this is PNB meeting end of September in Berkeley, and attached to it, Sherna's talking points paper and Steve Brown's... a point that he wants to bring up about funding by Pacifica, and I think that's all the pieces, is it not?
I would like to ask a little bit of a question, because I heard Brian say that he was spending some of his time preparing for the PNB retreat, and I didn't know that we were having Brian expend much energy on that, so that's news to me.
Oh, no, this is the... There's a two-day retreat with the general managers and the CFO and the ED and affiliates coordinator and the web person or something.
Okay.
We have no choice.
Well, actually, Brian, the concern that I'm trying to raise here ties into exactly this kind of presentation, I think. this committee, from its inception, has in, and the consultant that you had, I keep forgetting his name.
Claude Marx.
Pardon?
Claude Marx from the Freedom Archive.
Right, right, exactly. Had raised this, and the committee has touched upon it repeatedly, and that is the concern about balance between the archival function and preservation and service. And some of us, anyhow, feel that the PNB doesn't quite understand, really, really understand, what the archive represents is a very valuable historical archive. And there's so much pressure on the archive, and maybe it also ties in to Steve's motion about finances. To raise money through the fund drives on air, but also to service the stations. And so the when we had this discussion, like, I don't even know when, I don't have the date on this.
A year ago or something.
Oh, yeah, the idea was actually that we wanted to have a meeting. The 3 points, I won't go into all of the background, but the 3 points were that we wanted to meet with the new ED together with you to discuss the relationship of the archive to the foundation and, among other things, explore ways of implementing a study that we had recommended a long time ago, which was to try and figure out how much of the resources, particularly the time people, is spent on servicing the stations, basically, through the production of material, compared to the preservation function. We also wanted, the second point was to hold a discussion with the PND at its January meeting, so this was like last January, to discuss our concerns about the issue of balancing the service and archive slash preservation function. And the third point was to consider forwarding a recommendation at some point for the foundation to hire a full-time salaried archivist and or development officer for you to continue to play the really vital role that you play as, you know, like main promoter, PR person, administrative director.
Yeah, thanks for I was wondering what I was going to do. What I was doing.
I personally feel very strongly that we still are in the same situation. Of not really, and this would be an opportunity for the ED and whoever all you're presenting to, Brian, to indicate the concern of the committee and people who are concerned about preservation of the focus, so much of the energy and resources that have to go into servicing. And how do we get a greater commitment from the foundation to focus on the preservation archive function.
On white.
Let me also just say that this issue of eventually that maybe again is not going to be this fiscal year, but the more times we say it, sooner or later maybe it would happen that we get a full-time archivist and/or development officer for the archive.
Right. As I was listening to you, Schwerner, and agreeing with everything that you said, my thought was to some of those tapes that have been permanently damaged and the time that it will take to get through bureaucracy to actually get money that's going to be important to us.
Mm-hmm.
For me, the realization, the reality of quibbling over $100,000 or $150,000 is an exercise in futility and a false economy for me. Because we need the multi-million dollars in the new building to really save the materials now. They are really are being ruined now. So my frustration is heightened every time I hear those things of getting the board to commit to something. That almost is as an exercise in futility because the board has committed, voted unanimously many times from the interim board to the new board to a changed board to preserve and maintain the archives. But the best that they can do, the best you guys can do, is what the foundation can provide, which is inadequate. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there is a sense of looking at the archives budget as to how can we make the revenue to give us the money to do our work. And again, it's that exercise in futility. Doing a fundraiser for $280,000,
mm-hmm.
spending 3 months of staff time to do it, which gives us about 3 months worth of time to do actual preservation work. I will say on the positive sense, the archives is preserving more and more materials in more and more creative ways and making them more accessible in better ways that impress even the preservationists. We are really doing work at the top of the game of audio preservation, which I learned from the conference in San Jose, the OCLC, which I can't remember the name of the conference. But, you know, the step to get to there to make it accessible in that finding aids and the library databases is really the huge step that we're getting at. So, yes, I don't know what to say. I think the study in terms of, like, how much staff time is devoted to one thing or another is a little, post-traumatic almost, because I think it's too obvious. You know, why do a study when we know it's already been reported by Claude, and we can certainly confirm that most of our time is done on raising money for ourselves and doing services to the station and programming for the station. The good news is the budget that I'm putting in this year does have a special line added for preservation work only, whether it's money to digitize certain recordings or promote certain things or, you know, outsource specific recordings to Preservation House. So we're doing little by little, but I agree that, you know, some statement has to be made.
And I think it has to be made by us as well as by you, that I'm assuming since the meeting is going to be in Berkeley that as chair, Bonnie would be able to do the committee report, and if we agree that she emphasized the concern about the amount of resources that go into service compared to the preservation and archival functions.
Speaking of that, since they moved that PNB meeting up, that puts it a week before the Bluegrass Festival, so I'm going to have to see whether I'm going to be able to do that. I don't know, but we'll work that out.
Okay, that may be
point of information. Is there some concern that the service part should be reduced somehow?
No.
Okay.
But that there be more support and a greater understanding of what it means that we have this archive and that it's not just viewed as this cash cow.
Right.
And also that it is not placed in a position what Brian just described is really, to me, quite incredible, that of all the time they have to spend to do that 2 days of fundraising, that 2 days probably just covers the amount of time they spent preparing for it, I suspect.
If you look at the balance of preservation work that should have been worked on, I think you're right. I think we're in a losing game, if you look at it philosophically. You know, Addie, did you want to add anything to that discussion? I have a feeling.
But sort of which part?
You know, what the board can actually, how the foundation can actually do in terms of what we're actually looking to do.
I mean,
in the big picture.
The thing is that to the extent that the foundation and the stations can see the archive as being able to provide really valuable resources, to the programmers, they, it's kind of like understanding that the archives can't provide anything unless we really save this, you know, unless we work with materials and save the materials, and that itself is, you know, the history of each station, the legacy of each station. I just don't think that it's valued the way I think it should be and the way I think it could be. And there's the whole problem of really looking at the same very small staff doing, the station relations and station services and all the support work and everything that has to actually be done for the archives, to keep the archives together. you know, without there being any real staff for that. I mean, there really isn't a cataloger. There really isn't an archivist.
Don White here.
Don, go ahead.
Yeah, well, this is really a very important discussion we're having, and I am very sympathetic to how overworked the archives is, and I'm really sympathetic, and I wish there was some way the board could be more effective in support. But I think there's one component that's being left out. There's the archival function, and there's the service to the stations and the distribution, but there's also this big question of the broader community benefiting from the archives. That is to say, getting the archives out to a broader community, even beyond the five stations and the 100 affiliates. And that is something that the board is discussing at length now, having a good discussion around. So I just think we should always keep in mind that there's this added component of how the Pacifica archives are going to be, you know, projected out very broadly, even to people who are doing broadcasting not on FM, but doing broadcasting in other, other modes.
What this really speaks to is, Brian, what it took to be able to get any audio on the website?
Yes. Well, go ahead. Go for it, Addie.
So the thing is that, you know, the business of the archives is to make the material accessible, is to save it and to make it accessible. The business of the art, that is the business of the archives.
Right.
The archives is in the wonderful position of not being a station, even though that's got a lot of limitations in that, you know, it can get those materials other places, and especially in this new world and new technology. Since Brian was born, since Brian became the director, I mean, for years, we've been trying to get audio from the archives onto the website so that it could be accessible to other people, and then obviously there could be a really good promotions and, you know, distribution effort coming straight from that material online. It's taken until yesterday, if not the day before, was it right, that we were able to get almost any audio on.
Oh, come on, it was at least a week ago.
Okay. And this has to do with just the way, what it takes to be able to get those negotiations and those and that work effort done through the organization, and who's budgeting what and who's taking care of the website and all that. It's really been difficult.
I understand.
So, you know, the thought that people are having an abstract discussion within Pacific about how this material ought to be distributed, and you know, we've got scars all over our bodies trying to get a few hours online.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's got to be seen in that context.
Yeah, well, I'm being educated here, so I understand more clearly every time I'm on one of these calls. So.
Yeah.
Oh, unless it's preserved, we can't even start talking about distribution. I mean, the first step is preservation.
Yay, sure enough.
The kind of things that the staff has been doing, in like, for example, when they're working on the From the Vault programs, you know, what they do is they look at programs that we've, you know, worked with in the preservation project, and then they look back into the archives collection. They see what else we have that's related, and then they see what, you know, work that stuff needs. So, you know, it's projects like that that extend and expand our ability to use and preserve the materials, and then we have to get them out.
I think we ought to bring in Phyllis Diller, who's an expert in preservation.
Yay!
And spearhead this effort.
I love it.
Is that the motion trees?
But I will say that when we got a yay for preservation, the double-edged sword here is, if something, you know, preservation is absolutely necessary, and then some people now are, like, looking at the other side of the coin, which is the broadest possible distribution of these treasures that can, but will have to be preserved, but then the broadest possible distribution of those to build the image of Pacifica as a provider to a broader community of the resources that are there. So I'm on the same page. I think we're all on the same page. It's just how do we reach all the goals that are there with such limited resources.
Well, can I ask if the report from the committee to the PNB could really, really make clear our concerns about you know, the amount of resources that go into servicing, and you know, as well as the way in which they are having to raise their money, and that may lead to whatever it is that Steve's motion is.
What's Steve's motion, Steve?
Is Steve here?
No, I'm still here.
Yeah.
Because the
you know, the other part of the concern is I hear Brian talk about what has to go into their preparation for their 2 days of fund drive, as well as you know, what it's taking away from their usual preservation work. You know, that's part of the whole problem.
But how can we say that the 2 days is wasted when, you know, we create a tape on the reading of War and Peace?
I'm talking about
we feature that as a premium. I mean, doesn't the pledge drive help the preservation, and the preservation helps the pledge drive? Don't they fund each other?
I agree that it all has to go hand in hand, or it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And look, a lot of the frustrations that everybody's talking about, there are similar frustrations from all of us who are on the air trying to make programming right now.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
And I honestly do not think that we can single out the archive. To me, the idea of the people at the archive, frankly, having the freedom to go ahead and create a few hours of exciting new programming is well worth it. I think that is a whole element of this that is really important, so that we can actually get people smiling about the archive and thinking about the archive. However, in order to make a two-hour, very comprehensive special, a Pete Seeger special, how many hundreds of hours of work is that, Brian?
We've already banged hundreds of hours on it.
We've already banged 35 hours transcribing it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's the nature of what we do.
Bonnie, from the vault, it does that same thing, and I think is a wonderful way to expose the material to people. The problem is then getting the stations to plug it in.
Right.
I don't disagree with you. I think they are slightly different things, but I don't disagree with you at all. I'm just saying that it isn't necessarily people being cavalier about not having the space or anything else. It's just that we're all kind of struggling to rebuild some infrastructure here and at the same time make some vibrant radio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, Steve, you had a proposal?
Yeah.
A motion?
Well, let me talk it out first, and then we'll see if we want to put it into a motion. Maybe the committee doesn't want to. The fact is that everybody knows that the archives have been more or less cut loose by Pacifica. They used to be supported by a certain percentage of Pacifica's revenue, and now that doesn't happen anymore. And my feeling is that there's a limited number of dollars out there, and if we have both Pacifica and the stations and the archives asking for money, it's just one more beggar in the street, and it becomes annoying to our population. My feeling is that it would be much better if Pacifica and the stations continue to raise money for themselves and allot a specified, stipulated safety net amount for the archives, so that it will not have to scramble all the time to put food in its mouth. This will not mean that we can't have special archive days, because then it functions as a just an interesting other way of raising money. But the money will still go to Pacifica, and Pacifica will still have to support the archives. I think it's foolish and sad to make the archives, it's like throwing out your old grandmother after she's supported the archives, basically support Pacifica. And so now you're throwing it out in the street saying, raise money, and if you raise enough money, we'll let you come in and eat at our table. I don't think that's a good model for Pacifica, and it doesn't serve the archives well at all, and that we should make a motion to change that. That's my feeling.
Fun information?
Yes, sir.
Brian, you used to get how much, 2% or 3% that used to go to?
It was 3% for most of the stations. KPFK had a discount because they were the landlords of the building, so our property.
Is there a basic minimum threshold that you consider that would be appropriate? 2%, 1.5%, 1%?
It shouldn't be a percentage. It should be based on the money they need. You can translate it to percent afterwards, but not first. I mean, we don't have revenues.
Right. Let me make it.
Where do you put a limit on what they need? Because obviously, what we're kind of saying is their needs are almost endless.
It will be a negotiated sum. They'll sit down each year and they'll talk about it.
Well, that's why I asked Brian.
Right. So let me give you some information. One, it is, as Teresa said, by definition, our needs will always be greater.
Right.
Once all of us are gone from this life and the next generation is here, the budget will not be $600,000. It will be $1.2 million. Because there'll be more tapes. The older tapes will still have to be digitized into whatever new media that's going to be around then. So, yes, the costs are going to be ever-increasing no matter what we do, by definition. The funding from Pacifica, the central services, we do get the money from the same pot of national gold. It's just not budgeted as central services income. It's hidden in a line called national support. And basically what it means is that we get the central services at a as-needed basis based on approval from the CFO and the ED. None of that is in writing. What it means is that, you know, if we do what we can to raise our revenue, what we don't make, the national office will make up based on the framework of the budget of the whole. The budget as a whole is inadequate. You know, if I really put together a budget of what our real needs were, it would be $1.2 million.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're talking about is to formalize again the central services 2% and 1% plus, you know, some sort of opportunity to fundraise on the air, which is not an obligation, even now as it is sort of like in the formula of the stations obligated to give us the fund drive date to offset the fact that we don't get central services 3%. We're having a hard time now getting the stations to commit to give us the days. It's been 4 months of discussion and we still don't have all five stations saying yes to letting us do this day. So somewhere between the line between the board voting or mandating or supporting the station and staff and the reality of the fundraising problem of the station is hitting the archives in our, you know, in our budget.
So you're saying that the stations are saying it's not necessarily a must carry?
There was never really a must carry about the archives fund drive. It was always the executive director, myself, and the CFO, you know, working with the stations to convince them that, you know, this is a good thing for everybody. If we raise enough money, it offsets some of that national office central services funding to, one, at the initial stage was to carry off that $5 million debt. As it sort of grew into other things, other departments needed more money, national program needs money, the affiliates program needs money, Spanish language programming needs money, new initiatives that are brought on by the board that don't have money coming in, somehow has to come out of that big pot of gold that the archives is sort of connected to. One of the ways that it used to be to separate the budget from preservation and services to the station was three different budgets run by the same department. Pacifica Program Services, which was the expenses to the service, station service and affiliates. Preservation, basically a percentage of somebody's time, was divided between those things. So it was actually in writing as to what the balance of staff time was. That went away, and what Sherna is talking about is basically bringing that back and having a realistic in writing balance of staff time. That would take, you know, I don't know what kind of bureaucracy to get to with the CFO and the ED agreeing to it, then taking it through committees and then the board to be voting on it, because it's a whole change of finance structure.
Or can it go the other way, Brian, where it goes to the PNB first?
Right.
Rather than it be, you know, a top management controlled decision, that the PNB recommends it, and then it's up to the ED and the CFO to work it out.
If the board can actually understand what it means by voting on that, to take it to the board, I don't think that I can work with the board even more than I'm working with you guys now, of saying, like, okay, so the budget used to be divided when it was the national program director who ran the archives, national programming, and built the affiliate program. That's why the budgets were separated, divided. When national programming went to Washington, D.C., the budget sort of filtered out into national office, and that's where the funding community pot sort of grew. Central services for the affiliates went in there. Central services for national office went in there. And, you know, the debt was the first priority for the foundation. Now we have less debt, but more departments asking for more money.
Right.
So we already do get, I think this year we got around $150,000 in national office support, which would have been the equivalent of central services.
Well, I wonder, would it be possible for the directors on the committee, well, first of all, for whoever's going to make the report for the committee, Bonnie or whoever's going to do it, to indicate kind of point to the kind of idea that Steve has raised. It may be premature at this point to try and bring it as a motion, but if we're talking about our larger concerns, this is one way of dealing with it, it seems to me. And if that could be initially just part of a report of one of the discussions of the committee and see what happens in the discussion with the PNB and then see what we could develop subsequently.
Don White here.
Bonnie?
Yeah, Don and then Sarv?
Yeah, I know that the board, the PNB, is very interested in this issue. I think in the minds of some, it's kind of also linked to prioritizing how the archives are going to move forward. And this discussion is around that very thing, you know, the priorities around services, around archives, preservation, all of these things. And certainly there's a real interest in the prioritizing of how the archives are going to be used in a broader sense, in the broader movement. So I think in Berkeley, this is going to be an important time to bring these issues out. And it may not be in the form of a motion, but I do know that directors are interested. Part of it's been kind of precipitated by the discussion over the whole issue of licensing and the access to the archives and so on. So I think that we need to have a report there, and Brian's report will be real key, and a lot of these issues can come up then. So whether it's in a form of a motion, I think the Berkeley meeting will be key to the archives and the understanding of all board members on the critical issues that have been discussed tonight.
Don, but I think it's important that it be a...
Sure,
but the committee report as well, not only Brian's report.
That is true.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Can we take Sarv, who was next on the stack?
Madam Chair, Steve Brown, may I say a word?
Yeah, may I let Sarv have his place on stack, and then I will put you after him, Steve?
Okay. What I was going to say was that, you know, we can begin to talk a lot at the PNB meetings, and we can get into the clouds, and we can never come down. I think it focuses people's attention when a specific resolution has been passed by a committee, or a motion has been made and put forth in front of the PNB, then it's a serious matter. And I think that what we should do is maybe it could be modified later, but some kind of a motion that comes from the archive that we pass and take it to the PNB and discuss it, that motion there. And that will focus their attention on it. That's all I want.
I wonder if we could, I'm just not sure that I'm sorry. Steve, you go ahead. I'm sorry.
Brian's description of the actual budgetary process made it clear. I didn't realize that mysterious entry in the budget was a subsidy for the archives. Nevertheless, I still think there should be a more positive, open, and dedicated commitment to the archives, public commitment, than there is now. My suggestion is the motion not be written by me or this committee, but that Brian write the motion and give it to us, and we'll look it over, and if necessary, edit, or if not, just submit it to the PNB as our own motion if we can agree on it.
Can I just, I'm sorry, can someone just tell me again how to mute? I have to get off the line for a minute and make another call.
Pound one.
Thanks, sir. Brian, that was actually what I was kind of leaning toward here. Might we be able to throw some discussion of this about an email? We do have another archive meeting. We have another archive meeting before the PNB meeting in September, because our regular meeting will be on the 25th.
Mm-hmm.
Just if that helps everybody get in their heads, because I'm not sensing that we are completely ready to put a motion.
Well, I'm not going to say no, and I'm not going to say yes yet, because I have to think about it. Because in getting the board to pass a motion to support the archives has already been done, and it really doesn't mean anything when it gets down to the point of the same person that voted to support the archives is the same person that would compromise the budget or confine the budget to fund another program. They're sort of like not aware. You know, you vote for Spanish language program because it's a good thing, but you don't really know that to pay for it, you have to take a percentage of the money from the archives to do so. And that happens a lot. So I don't know that any motion in a positive, overwhelming public way is really going to do anything. So I understand that it's my job to figure out the thing that's going to actually do something. that's why I have to say I have to think about it.
Understood. Does anyone else have anything on this particular topic?
Hello? Hello?
Hello, Teresa?
Yes. We really need to discuss this a lot more. I mean, we should probably discuss this at every meeting. In fact, I'm seeing when I'm discussing the budget is, in fact, I'm very, very fortunate that I'm both on the archives and the affiliates committee. I think that all of our budgets have jumped up tremendously, and I would have thought, you know, we would have had a little reprieve once we'd pay back all this debt, but it doesn't appear to be so, and we are struggling among the units and among different areas, for this money. We're fighting each other. There has to be a better way. I mean, I'm very disappointed to hear that the units are not jumping at the opportunity, the stations, I should say, are not jumping at the opportunity to... I'm going to have to send an email to Greg, because I was not aware that there was any chance that a station could say no to the fundraising day.
I think it's just about the days to confirm. I can't say that anyone has said no more fundraisers for the archives.
No, I don't think
but when you get to confirm the day, when you get to the part where you confirm the day to get the programs to realize they have to preempt programmers, that's when it becomes more complicated. Who gets preempted? Who doesn't? What are you going to do, Brian? Have you thought about diversity? Where are you going to make my guy the one who's going to be pitching? So it becomes much more complex. And Dan Coughlin used to be the person that would basically convince the station that it's in everybody's to everybody's benefit to do that.
Brian, it's not complexity that makes it difficult. It's politics. Basically,
I was being kind.
Please don't be kind. We have to be a little bit honest here.
Oh, but it basically is boiled down to the program director saying, okay, you, and you are off the air this today. We're doing the archives without any guff.
Well, no, actually, it's the development director.
The program director.
Yeah, it's the development director, the program director, and the GM that all basically have to weigh in, because our fund drive does, at some level, compromise the ability of the stations to fund drive, you know, 2 weeks before and 3 weeks afterwards. So the development director will be the one to say, well, wait a minute, you know, we just didn't make our goal for the fourth time. Is it really in our best interest to let the archives use our airtime? So those discussions are reasonable for those people to weigh in.
Oh,
that's why it's complicated and political.
I'm sorry. Bonnie, I have a question for Brian, and I need to point out that we're almost out of time.
Yes, we are.
I wonder, I know that Google has been interested in putting more and more things online. Have you approached them about, I mean, it might be a way of both addressing the issue Don is raising and getting some money for preservation.
Right. I did have a meeting with Google about Google Audio and working with digitizing the entire collection and making it accessible online, which would sort of address Don's question and the philosophy and the discussions about licensing. And they were very positive. They came and visited and looked at the collection. They took home a bunch of CDs. And where it lies now is copyright, ladies and gentlemen.
That's right.
Unless we can assure them that we have the copyright to release that material on the Internet for download, streaming, and whatever, they're not touching it with a 10-foot pole, which is why I sort of wonder, and no disrespect to the discussion about licensing at the board level, but I'm the only employee in the foundation that actually writes licenses for Pacifica material in the archives, and I'm wondering why I'm not included in the discussion other than at this level, just being introduced to the discussion. So I would encourage the board, in whatever levels of discussion they're having with whatever parties, that they include some consultation with myself.
Don White here.
Don, I think you're next on stack.
Steve Brown is that?
Oh, I'm sorry. You know what? Steve, were you first?
No, I was not.
Okay. Sorry. Go ahead,
Donnie, put me back on. I want to follow up on my question.
Okay. Don?
Yes. Oh, well, I really appreciate what Brian just said, and I understand how he must feel about this. Now, you were in New York when we had a very comprehensive report on licensing, and so I think you were in the room for that. You saw the professors. So out of that, and because of that and other things, there is this discussion over, and the professor was quite an advocate for, you know, broadly distributing to a broader base the archives. Now, I believe you're right. I think the board would like to have closer discussions with you to look at your priorities on those issues. And I will be more than happy to act as kind of a intermediary on this issue, because I think there you have been short-circuited here a little bit. So I think that discussion needs to go ahead. And I think this is healthy that you made that comment, and I think it's healthy that the board representatives, the directors on this call, are hearing that. So I think this can open up a better discussion, Brian.
Well, thank you. I know that Dr. Lessig made a presentation at the Society of American Archivists, and I heard some discussion about his presentation at the OCLC. So I think that I can, and myself and Addie, can bring some more information to the table.
Excellent.
Can we, are we extending for 5 minutes?
What's that? I'm sorry?
Shall we extend for 5 minutes?
I
have Steve and Sherna on stack on this particular subject.
Yes.
We're over time, and I'm asking for 5 minutes.
My question was discursive, so you can put me on the next stack, whatever it is. Okay, it wasn't directly to this topic.
Okay.
All
right. Does anybody object to extending for 5 minutes? Apparently not. Go ahead, Sherna.
I want to get back to the whole issue of copyright and possible arrangements with Google, Brian. The reason I'm raising this is Brian knows that we put up over 1,000 hours of our oral history, created a virtual oral history archive of our original oral history recordings with some 300 narrators.
I'm just trying to understand who's we.
At Cal State Long Beach, the oral history program, and then I developed this project. And once there was a way to access it via Google, if they still come into our site, we are getting, after that, our tech staff managed to get Google to have links. We had something like 100,000 hits a month.
Wow.
Now, our material is not downloadable. People can listen, and if they need to, they have to write to us for permission, and we send them. In other words, Google access is incredible. I wonder if there's a way, Brian, and maybe this can be written somehow into a new staff line, or if that's necessary, for someone to start really doing an inventory of those materials that may not have copyright issues, those, and prioritize those where copyright might have to get cleared, and
Brian,
you know, then someone has to make context. It's a big job.
Big job.
I have 30 minutes next week. I can come in.
Brian,
but it's not getting any easier.
Do we have to, like, fan your
easier.
Face? Do you need a cold washcloth or anything?
Madam Chair, can we please extend for 3 hours?
Can I finish my comment?
Yeah, go ahead, sure. No, I'm sorry.
That if we are able to start getting a handle on it, and Google is willing to, you know, do the digitization and preservation for us, and then we could start getting those things distributed that can immediately get distributed, and that some efforts being made to find out basically what can and can't, who has to be contacted for copyrights. I'm sure a lot of the people are dead. It's going to require a real focus on the issue, but if this enables us to do the kind of preservation that concerns me so much, I certainly think that it's a way that we've, you know, got to start moving on it.
Before I let, I know Addie would probably want to respond, and I hope you do. But I think for me, when I was talking with Google, you know, I knew that we couldn't take millions of dollars and digitize the archive and give it back to them in 3 months. But what I asked for really was money to start the inventory, to make sure of what materials were clear, to give them in the first stage, and then we would go to the next level of copyright clearance for the next level of materials. They did not want to spend a dime on that work. They said, you do the work, and then you come back to us, and then we'll talk. That work is the work that nobody wants to pay for, including the foundation.
Yeah, and you know what? What your experience, to my mind, is completely customary. What I deal with in my day-to-day work is generally more music-oriented, but a lot of it is licensing and copyright availability, and mm-hmm. the first thing that you are asked is if you are willing to indemnify the rights. And if you say no, that you can't, they move on.
Well, Brian, how did you do this for the material that, for instance, on the from the vault?
A lot of time, you know, it's a as per case basis. The Margaret Mead materials, we contacted the Mead Centennial Library and talked to Margaret Mead's daughter and offered them the donation of the recordings that we preserved in return for permission to use them on this program. Bertrand Russell, we went to the Bertrand Russell papers in Canada and talked to the guy who worked on the papers, and got him involved. And so each episode, we look at the copyrights. What can we use? What can't we use? And what do we have to do to be able to use it in this format?
Maybe what
so,
we need
so
instead
far,
of an archivist right
we,
now is someone who really takes on that whole issue, if that might lead us to Google getting involved in preservation and making the materials available online.
You're absolutely right. That's archive staff position number 3 that has been proposed just this evening, with no money to pay for it.
Well,
I don't mean to be flippant, but it really is a reality for me that we need a development director, we need a cataloger, we need an archivist, we need a grant writer, we need, you know, in the dream world, all of these are absolutely necessary to the life of the archives. So what do you do? You know, we do the best we can with what we have, and then you guys, being more informed directors, are the ones that I'm hoping will take the information to the next levels to have those discussions of at least the realization that the local station board did the station know that the archive is huge, it has a huge job to do, not enough money, very few resources, and it's probably one of the most important things that they could actually do for society and culture is by helping use your position as directors to help this archive be preserved and made accessible and find the money.
Well, Brian, can I tell one last comment or question? That if the board knew that at the other end of a position of someone who looks into the copyright and, you know, starts to get clearances, et cetera, is a commitment from Google to digitize and put those materials online, it seems to me that that's a different ballgame than simply asking for a position.
Madam Chair,
well, right. You're absolutely right. When I propose a position in the archives budget, last year it was the cataloger position, the first question the CFO asked me was, how much revenue will this position generate?
Well,
so that may work into it. If I can convince the CFO that this position will generate millions of dollars from a Google deal, then he'll probably at least put it into the proposed positions to go to the finance committee to be reviewed and argued for by the CFO, not by me, and then goes to a board for a board vote. So I'm not sure how to rank. You know, cataloger, I think, is at the top of the list of priorities. Again, to make sure that the materials are processed to get to the point of copyright clearance for the next level.
Right. Well, okay. I just want to say one thing, which I don't get the link between the Google and the millions of dollars. I get the millions
of that's,
users.
Right.
Okay, but the reason why, the thing is, Sherna, and everybody, and Brian, forgive me, but one of the things that we've really been trying to do as part of all these preservation grants is do an inventory, and doing mm-hmm. doing like a gross inventory is an enormous task that takes, you know, more whatever sticks and apples than I've got available for myself. But you know, I mean, you can ask anybody in the staff or volunteers who walk in over there. That's, you know, when they see my face, they get scared because they know they're going to have to start working on the inventory.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if perhaps we could come up with some way where we could get some more volunteers in there and stuff at a time when it's not going to interfere with everything that the staff is trying to do day to day. And make a big push. You know, I want to go and make a big push on the very grossest level of the inventory sometime. Brian, we were thinking when? October or November or something.
Eddie, can I ask, in the inventory, is part of the information, is the inventory done, information on the copyright status?
We can't get that. No, that was way too time-consuming.
But if it could lead to...
Yes, exactly. It's a preliminary, it's a stage, it's a step.
It's the first step.
It's way more preliminary than you would like to think,
mm-hmm.
but it's a very important first step so that we can at least describe some things. Right now, the only materials that we really could go that extra, you know, the full step on that you're talking about
mm-hmm.
is the ones that we've already processed either, you know, through program, you know, through use in programs, through, you know, preservation project or, you know, because people have asked for them. And so, you know, there are a few hundred of those that we could work with, or, you know, a high hundreds we can work mm-hmm. with.
This is would be held up until the cataloger is then hired, is that it?
Oh, no, the gross level of inventory is just that people just really don't have time, and it's the least desirable job, I believe.
Right. Nobody wants to do it because it's so cold in there.
It's so cold and it's boring, and we try entertainment, we try snacks, we try everything. We're making some progress, but you know I've reduced the level of the goal from really shelf description, from pretty much item on shelf description to shelf description,
mm-hmm.
and box description, because we really want to know especially the stuff that's not been processed. We want to know what it is. The stuff that has been processed, we want to know if we actually have it.
Right.
Well, after they put in a certain number of hours, do they get a little pin that's like a little polar bear or something?
That's a great idea.
The polar bear idea.
It's really
a jacket.
Specific jacket.
Say all. It is after 7:30, I believe.
Yeah, Bonnie, I have to leave.
Yes, I also do, and I believe there was someone else that had to leave.
Out of chair.
Thank you all.
I think we have to look toward wrapping up here.
I would like to hear, Madam
Chair, Steve Brown.
Yes, Steve.
Question for Brian before he goes. You're talking about cold and chill. It brings to mind something else. What percentage of our records are in old format, tape and rapidly disintegrating media?
I think we have to revive
Brian. Wait, what's the question? What percentage of our
archives are in dangerously disintegrating materials such as tape and maybe old LPs?
Yeah, I was going to say 100%.
Well, what about the stuff we've been converting to digital?
That's not going to last that long.
That's still carbon. It's still going to disintegrate.
We're
going
to have to,
years. What do you preserve? What do you want to preserve?
The archivists no longer consider there to be a permanent medium.
I understand, but you can preserve it in a medium that hopefully will be compatible with ongoing hardware and software platforms.
And then you have to know that you have to budget both the time and money to be able to migrate it again.
And the technology changes.
So my question was, if you're I assume that tape is the least desirable form of preservation media. If you're going to move this, let's say, into however long DVDs and CDs or whatever the new kind of hard material is, those materials don't need the same kind of chilling, dry storage conditions as a tape does, right? So
actually, they do.
They do?
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't store CDs in room temperature or in hot warehouses. It goes in a climate control, just like the reel-to-reel tapes.
And have a
lower life expectancy than the original master reel-to-reel tape.
And are subject to all kinds of
glitches.
This is ending the call on a bad
note.
Let's leave it with a positive note. I'll put an idea in your head that for the fun drive in November, the archive staff would like to have an online silent auction for artifacts of any kind. What we're trying to do is get, Ry Cooter to donate a signed copy of a record, Lily Tomlin to sign a copy of whatever she has to donate. So go to, your high-end people to see if they have something to donate that would be appropriate for the archives website online silent auction.
It doesn't have to be appropriate. If we got a pair of Amy Goodman's panties that she autographed.
No!
I do have my standards, I must say. And that sort of hits my line.
We should get Phyllis Diller to be
Phyllis Diller idea. We could throw in Dick Clark.
If Phyllis Diller would sign on to be our spokesperson, I would totally go with it.
That would be great. That was brilliant.
Thank you,
Brian. Does anybody know anybody who knows Phyllis Diller?
No, but I'll go find her now that you said it.
Thank you very
much. All right.
Much.
Good night,
thank
everybody.
I got to go.
All right. I'll be looking around. I'll be looking around for something.
Okay.
Okay.